Cool. Okay. Verbs and verb phrases. So we're starting off with verbs and verb phrases. If you pick up any grammar, then chances are they're going to start by talking about verbs and verb phrases, or at least when they start talking about phrases, then verbs, phrases are the ones that they start off with. Because verb phrases are, well, I don't want to say they're more important than the other phrases, but maybe they are a little bit more important, right? All phrases are equal, but verb phrases are more equal, something like that. The verb phrases and verbs in the sentence, they control other elements of the sentence, right? So we know that syntactically, it's the predicator that calls for other elements in the sentence or requires other elements in the sentence to make it grammatical, right? So that's why you'll see grammar start with a discussion of verbs and verb phrases, and then usually move on to something like nouns and noun phrases, and then other phrases like adjective phrases, right? So we got to classify these. What are we talking about when we talk about verb phrases, right? We use grammatical or inflectional criteria to differentiate between lexical verbs, auxiliary verbs, and catenatives. If you don't know what these are, stay tuned. This lesson is for you. But grammatical and inflectional criteria, these are formal criteria, right? The forms of them, what they look like, right? So I identify different verb forms, also based on whether they're finite or non-finite. If you remember from exploring grammar, finite verb forms show tense or modality, right? So your main verb in or main verb phrase in the sentence is going to be finite, right? It's going to either be tensed or then it's going to have a modal verb in it. If you have trouble distinguishing between finite and non-finite, or if you have trouble understanding non-finite or finite verbs, that's totally understandable. And if you can't figure it out on your own, let me know. I have some other resources. I also can't seem to keep these in my brain. Although, at least there's it's a sort of either or situation. You can look it up if you don't know. We can also use functional criteria to distinguish between self-standing verbs, right? Verbs that are serving as main verbs and dependent verbs, right? So verbs that are auxiliaries or some non-finite verb forms. So some of these you're probably familiar with, at least from exploring grammar, but maybe even from your lessons in Rukio and stuff like that. So you know about auxiliary verbs and helper verbs and this kind of stuff. These verbs, they can't stand on their own. Right, they add something. They add some sort of meaning to the sentence, or they are used to signal aspect or something like that. But they're not the verb of the sentence, right? They're not the verb that has the sort of verb meaning in there, right? That's the self-standing verb. That's the lexical verb, right? That's the main verb. We also use. Well, there's verbs that call for certain complements, right? So there's copular verbs, there's transitive verbs, right? And these are going to call for different kinds of complements, right? And there are also ditransitive verbs, which are going to call for more than one complement. There's complex transitive verbs, right? That are going to call for more than one complement, right? And then there's intransitive verbs that don't call for anything, right? In order to be grammatical, right? So we think about the number and the types of complements that verbs require as a way of classifying different verbs, right? And this actually is something that you'll find in dictionaries when you go look up verbs, especially, well, no, most English dictionaries are going to at least tell you whether a verb is transitive or intransitive. Some of them will also say things like, copula or sometimes linking verb, something like that, right? And they'll do it by sense as well, because some verbs have a transitive sense and an intransitive sense, right? And then finally, we want to think about semantic information, right? So with the previous ones being inflectional information or something like that, there's also the idea of, you know, what the verbs mean, right? What kind of meaning is it, right? So dynamic verbs are going to give us actions and activities, right? These verbs get used in the progressive quite easily. Then you have stative verbs. These are verbs of cognition, right? Verbs related to what happens in your mind. Also verbs of feeling, right? Verbs of emotion, right? So not only just your senses, but some kind of, what your heart feels, right? There are material processes, mental processes, and relational processes, and we'll get into these a little bit, but you can kind of already see what they probably entail, right? Mental processes are going to be verbs that do have to do with, you know, the brain and using your brain or using your mind, right? Relational processes are verbs that are going to link two things together in some kind of relationship, right? So, but we'll define these terms a little bit later. Okay. Cool. So let's go on here. We've got three classifications here. And we're going to do a little exercise in a second, but let me set it up first. So, we got lexical verbs, right? This is an open set of open class of verbs. I mean, I know before we've talked about how, you know, verbs are an open class, right? In terms of parts of speech, because we can create new verbs almost sort of at will. And we do create new verbs all the time. But that was kind of sort of a lie, because we create new lexical verbs, right? We don't get new auxiliary verbs, right? Our auxiliaries is a small class, and we really don't get new ones. Instead, what we do is what we get is new lexical verbs, and then we can use the auxiliaries with those lexical verbs, right? Because the auxiliaries are used for doing something else. When we look at the chain of verbs, the lexical verbs are going to be the last one, or sometimes the only verb in the verb phrase, right? And when we use these in questions or in negation, they're going to require an operator. So an operator is, you know, your finite operator, like the word do. So when sometimes when you make a question in English, you have to use do, right? Do you speak English, for example, right? Which is how you have to ask it. You can't just say, speak you English, right? Which you can, or which you used to be able to do, and which you can in other languages as well. You can't just flip the subject and the predicator. So you have to use this operator, right? Or also in negation, right? You don't speak English, right? Something like that. You do not, right? Instead of something like you not speak English, which, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this on the recording, but I mean, come on, if we were getting right down to it, wouldn't we do away with this process here? What's going on with this? This seems like overly complicated, right? Can we not simplify this a little bit? Something like that. I know people like to complain about language a lot, but nobody seems to complain about this silliness, right? With this, you know, having to put do in there. Why do we have to do this? The verb do is great. It can do a lot of things, obviously, but come on. If we're listing the things that need to be changed, maybe this would go at the top. Okay, moving on. Catenative verbs, these are verbs of chaining. We'll look at these in a second. You probably saw this already in your homework for the reading. So sometimes we kind of put verbs together in a sort of chain. And what happens here is you have the verb called the catenative verb is going to control a non-finite complement or a to infinitive. So what comes after it is a complement that is in a non-finite form. So it's either the en or the ing form, or then it's a to infinitive right after it, right? These require a do operator, just like lexical verbs in questions and negation, right? And then the last group is familiar to you already, because these are auxiliary verbs. You know about these. The primary ones are be, have, and do, but there are other types. There's your modal auxiliaries like will and would and can and could and shall and should, these kinds of things. Your semi-modals like need and dare and be gonna and have to, right? And then there's also something probably a little bit new to you, but lexicomodal and lexical auxiliaries, right? So we'll look at those as well. So what you have to do here is, I hope I don't mess this up with showing you the answers beforehand, but the task is to identify the first verb of the verb phrase in each sentence and what type of verb it is like. Okay, so it's a lexical, genitive, auxiliary, right? And so you have them here, right? And we can kind of, maybe I'll move them around afterwards. But these are your verb phrases there. And I'm going to open up the groups here in a second. So I'm going to pause the recording. Yes. So the task was to identify only the first verb in the verb phrase, right? So I'll show you here, you know, you could either do it by following the definitions of these different types of verbs, or you could do a process of elimination, right? So the first one, the child cried all night, you know, this one, there's only this verb here. And we know that with lexical verbs are the last or the only verb in the verb phrase. So when you've only got one verb in the verb phrase, then that's a lexical verb. The tricky one was seven, because you've got did here, and this verb is also one of the primary auxiliaries, right? So you've got be, have, and do as the primary auxiliaries, but each one of these auxiliaries can also be a lexical verb, right? So you would move, this one would go over here. It's the only verb in the verb phrase, and do can be a lexical verb. I mean, English is super duper fun like that. That's another thing we got to change if we're going to change things, is that either these only are only auxiliaries, right? Or we come up with some different auxiliaries, right? You got to pick a lane here. It can either be a lexical verb or an auxiliary. Can't be both. But of course, this English is, you know, party time. So we have here ones that can be both. So I think it'll be a little bit tricky. Well, number four is pretty straightforward, because we're only identifying the first verb in the verb phrase, and the first verb is can, and can is a pretty typical modal verb, right? So your modal verbs are can, could, will, would, shall, should, these kinds of things, right? Some of the tricky ones, at least that when I came in that you were working on, were ones like... Well, this one, the one I'm moving around right now, to goes under auxiliary verbs because to is a lexical auxiliary. This is actually pulled from the Downing book. Hold on a second. I can find it for you here, which page number it is. Wait a second. It's right. It's when Downing and Locke talk about lexical auxiliaries, they use this as an example. So if you go and check the book, you'll see it in there. But this is a lexical auxiliary, so that falls under that. They give you actually a list. So I'll put it in the chat. Downing gives a list of lexical auxiliaries on page, and let me find it here, three, well, in, I'll put it not on page, but in section 37.3, okay? So you can check that out. I don't know if the page numbers are the same between the editions. Then another tricky one was, I got locked out yesterday at work. So the first verb here is got, right? And this is, we could do a process of elimination here, right? So it's not the last or the only verb in the verb phrase. So we can remove that from our consideration. It's not a primary auxiliary, right? Got is not a modal. It's not a semimodal, right? It's not one of the lexicomodal or lexical auxiliaries. That leaves cadenative, right? And cadenative, we have here, you know, control a non-finite complement. Well, this is what it does, locked out, right? This is a non-finite complement. It's the EN past participle form. And it would require a do operator, right? Did I get locked out, right? Let's see. Somebody asked something in the chat here. What is in sentence two then? Is about to. Yeah. So is part of this lexical auxiliary. So the lexical auxiliaries, I'll show you the page here, actually. Hold on a second. Let's go and share the different screen here. So this is the Downing and Locke book. So you can see here, it says, it's got your B plus lexical item plus two infinitive, right? And it says lexical auxiliary is a term used for a set of verbs of modal or aspectual meaning, which form chain-like structures with the main verb of the verb phrase. VG means verb phrase here, verbal group in Downing. But then they've got a list here, like be going to, be about to, right? And you can see here what comes after the lexical auxiliary is the main verb, right? So that would be the lexical verb there. So in the example of we're going to need more staff here, need is your lexical verb here. And the lexical auxiliary is this be going to, right? So it's like that, right? They're auxiliaries just like the other auxiliaries, you know, they precede the lexical verb like that, okay? Yeah, good question. Where was it? Yeah, so the other ones more or less fall in the line, right? Painted goes over here. He won't, will is a modal. Someone put it over here. Da-da-da. The rector wants to see us immediately, right? Cadative, I'd say, right? We've got a two infinitive after it. And she managed to meet him at the station. Drop that one in there. Cool. Okay. Let's go on, huh? Or any other questions? I'll pause the recording for a second. And let's go on with our PowerPoint here, okay? Right, so let's take a deeper look here at lexical verbs, okay? Lexical verbs are gonna require the periphrastic do, right? And what that means is the do that you need when you go into this negative sentences or in questions, right? So the lexical verb here is like, I like skating. And then I need the periphrastic do when I go into this, I don't like skating or I do not like skating, right? Or then do you like skating instead of just like you skating, right? It wasn't always like this in English, but it is now, right? And it is like this in other languages as well. And if periphrastic do is your thing, there's a little bit of linguistic controversy around this, or there was some controversy around this about where it comes from. There are some languages that are conspicuously close to English that use periphrastic do, right? Which you can check that out on your own time, or I can send you some sources later. Lexical verbs are going to require the pro form when avoiding repetitions. So one thing you can't do in English is have sentences like my husband cooks and so I cook, right? Or so cook I, for example, my husband cooks and so cook I. That doesn't work there. You need instead this pro form, my husband cooks and so do I, right? You can't slip the verb in there. You can't repeat it. It's one of the things about English that don't work. Also requires a do when you want to emphasize contrast, right? Your friend did not know how to do the assignment. yes, he did know, right? So we need this do in there. We can't just say, yes, he knew, right? Again, the verb do, this sounds silly. The verb do does a lot in the language, right? So that's why we should relieve it of its primary auxiliary duties, right? It shouldn't have to do all those things. It does so much else. Somebody saying also requires WH question, except when WH is a subject. Do I remember right? I believe in terms of lexical verbs, requires WH questions. I'm not entirely sure what you mean by the question. Let me pause the recording first. Okay, so recording back on. You want to practice these? We can do exercise one for homework here. And likewise, there's this exercise, which I'm not going to require for homework, but we could go over it in the next class if you want. But this is a list of different types of verbs and their complementation. You've got, you know, the sections in the booklet there for you. But this is a review. You already know this from exploring grammar, right? So intransitive verbs require no complementation, no object, or no complements, right? Copulas, verbs like be or become or seem, are going to require a subject complement, right?
Or no, we don't see the PowerPoint.
Oh,
we see.
Well,
what?
That's a problem. Here we go. How's this?
Yeah.
So, that's sorry. Thanks for chiming in. Sorry about that. What I was saying. Yeah. So intransitive verbs. So I'm going to present here a list of different types of verbs and the complementation that they require or don't require in terms of intransitive verbs, right? So I was just talking about copula. You either need a subject complement or a locative complement, right? Monotransitive verbs require only one complement, direct object, right? Ditransitive need two. When you've got two objects, then, or when you only have one object, then it's going to be the direct object. And you can mark it like that. I think there might be a very, very small handful of cases. I don't want to even say that. If there's only one object, you should probably mark it as the direct object, even if it's like a case of like eluding the like having a sentence with the indirect object and direct object, and then like a process of like where the direct object is kind of taken out but can be recovered based on context. Still, I don't know. Then there's complex transitive verbs, two complements, right? Direct object, object complement, right? There are complex transitive verbs which require a direct object and a sort of locative object, and ones that require a direct object and prepositional object. So these, for example, when we have an indirect object and a direct object and we move the indirect object to after the direct object, it's going to become a prepositional object, right? And so you can match things up here, and we can do that task together, or you can do it with your study group. Okay, let's go on here a little bit though. So the reason that verb phrases are at the earlier sections of grammar books is because verb phrases, or the verbal group, is the central obligatory element in sentence structure, right? Because it functions as the predicator, right? In independent clauses, right? So you're going to need to have verb phrases in there, right? We know that we've got to have at least one lexical verb, right? So that's what we saw in our little task we did there when we were recognizing the first verb of the verb phrase. Sometimes it was lexical when we only had one verb, but sometimes it was modal, sometimes it was cognitive, whatever. Those came before the lexical verb, though, right? We could have more auxiliaries around them, and we've seen examples of that. There's examples in your booklet as well. The Verb phrase is going to contain either a finite or a non-finite verb form. And if we were to identify the verb phrases in the following sentences, we'd get, you know, the sentence, he has been swimming since he hurt his leg, has been swimming, and hurt, right? These verb phrases are separate. They're not part of the same. So has and been are auxiliaries in the verb phrase has been swimming. Swimming is the lexical verb there. And these auxiliaries are being used with this lexical verb to show aspect and these kinds of things. Whereas hurt, he hurt his leg. Hurt there is a lexical and has no auxiliaries, right? Let's keep in mind, though, and I'll say this, remind me to say this a few times over the course, that aspect is shown by a, write it in the chat, combination of two. So progressive aspect, right, is be, a form of the verb be, plus the ing participle, for example, right? It's not one or the other, right? It's a combination of those two, right? And I'll say that over, I'll say it again, because you're going to have to do some verb phrase analysis on your exam, surprise, surprise. And this might be part of it, but I'll say that again, and we'll look at that in most of our classes, certainly when we talk about verb phrases in the next class as well. Okay. So let's take the curious case of be as part of a verb phrase. So this is what I was talking about a little bit earlier when I said, you know, these fun verbs like be can function as both a lexical verb and an auxiliary. So we need to make the decision on a case-by-case basis, right? So when you are presented with the verb be, you can't just automatically mark it as something, right? When you're presented with the verb, a verb like swim, you can automatically mark it as lexical. You know swim is a lexical verb. Swim is not a modal verb. It's not an auxiliary, right? So you can... And it's not even a cadenative, I don't think. Not like try or something like that. No, it's not a cadenative. It would control, well, it would, what would follow would most likely be the preposition to, right? You swim to something. Yeah. So when we're presented with the verb be, you know, maybe you should like have a little alarm bell go off in your head and say, you know, hold up, let's see what we got here, right? Because it could be auxiliary, but it could be also be a lexical. Fortunately, its placement in the verb phrase can tip us off to what it is, right? If it's last in the verb phrase, then it's going to be a lexical verb. If it's the only verb in the verb phrase, then it's going to be lexical, right? So if you say something like, I am a grammar teacher, then it's going to be the lexical verb. But if it's something like, I am teaching grammar, right? Now you've got an auxiliary on your hands. It's not last, right? Instead, it's in the beginning. And so we know that auxiliaries in English precede the lexical verb. So if it comes in the beginning, then we know it's going to be auxiliary, especially if there's verbs after it. Well, if there are verbs after it, then it's auxiliary. So let's try exercise 2 from the file classes 2 and 3 exercise on verbs. So do that in your study groups for homework, right? If you need to get in touch with your study groups, then please get in touch with me and I can send you each other's emails. Cadenative, we already kind of talked about this when I was answering your question. So cadenative means chained or phrase structure, right? So we get the cadenative plus another cadenative plus a lexical verb. So that's what we looked at in the Downing and Locke book. Here's the actual sentence from the Downing and Locke book. We decided to try to rent a house near the sea, right? You've got your color coded there. The blue verbs here are cadenative, right? The first verb in the phrase structure is cadenative. The next verb is going to be the non-finite verb form, because that's what cadenative verbs do. They control a non-finite verb. It's going to be either to infinitive or the past participle, the ed form, right? Or the ing form. Or no, I don't know if it can be the ing form. Don't quote me on that. Strike that from the recording. We'll fix that in post, right? The non-finite verb form, recognize though, that the non-finite verb form can also be cadenative at the same time, right? So it can be the next verb after the cadenative, but it can also be the cadenative for another non-finite verb form, which is the case of to try in this example. Usually cadenatives do not have object complements, okay? So so you're probably not gonna find those. Page 39 of the booklet is going to have a list there. Not an exhaustive list, but a list. I think I also have an example on Moodle. We can check that in a second. A list of examples, but I can double check in a second. Some more homework. Read pages 41 to 48 from the theory booklet. Have a look at the relative chapters from Downing and Locke. Or relevant sections there. And then also exercise 5 on cadenatives. So we've got exercises 5, exercise, was it, let's see, 2. And there was one more thing we wanted to do for homework. Hold on. Exercise 1. Yeah. So we can do that. All right, I'm gonna stop the recording now.